Hi, this is Pirate Davy Jones with PiratePods.com. Tonight I am speaking with Heisen Clay and Maurice Robert of The Pity Party. How are you doing?
Good.
Great.
How are you?
Very well, very well. How's the weather out there in L.A.?
Too hot.
Great, great. Could you please give us a little background on where you're from? What's your story?
Well, we're from the Valley of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
As a Valley girl, the movie. And we went to high school together. And then we went our separate ways, and then we met back up again and hatched a master plan to start a band.
Wow. So how long did that take? I mean, was it just a matter of, hey, we should make some music together, or did this take a number of years to develop that?
Well, we've been making music together for a while, I guess. Like, we were in choir together.
In high school.
But in terms of the band, I actually went to New York for a few years. And we decided to be in a band when I came back after grad school. And we just started as soon as I moved back to L.A.
I see. So, to some degree, everything just clicked.
Yeah. I mean, neither of us have been in bands before. And I think we only felt comfortable with each other. There was a coup and he turned into a two. There was a coup.
Could you tell me a bit about the war between 8 and 4?
Sure. That was written...
Maurice came and visited for a month during, like, Christmas vacation from grad school. And
the trial run.
Yeah, we spent, like, every day of that month recording. And the war between 8 and 4 came into existence during at that time. As did... two other songs that haven't reared their heads yet, but are still at the back of our minds.
And it was all recorded on
my digital 8-track in my apartment.
Whoa.
Late at night, like in the morning during Bush's re-election.
Yeah, it was one night we were recording during Bush's re-election, and we recorded all this amazing Peter Jennings audio because he'd been newscasting for way too long for the election results. And he was getting kind of loopy, and he was, like, getting goofy and saying weird things, and it was really late at night. We had this awesome audio stuff of Peter Jennings, who, of course, isn't with us anymore. And we were really excited to use that on our record, like, so fucking excited. I bet you think you can predict how this will end. There was a coup, and he turned into a two. When it came time to record our EP, on the last day, we're like, oh, I gotta go get my digital 8-track recorder because it has all that Peter Jennings stuff on it. And I got it, and somehow the whole disc had been wiped and everything was gone. So I lost Peter Jennings on election night 2004.
Yeah.
I also lost a lot of other stuff, but that's another story. But that's what happens in the digital world, you know? That wouldn't happen if it was all on tape.
Right.
They burned in a fire.
We have a few of those stories. One time I woke up in the middle of the night to see Ronald McDonald doing a stage dive on television. You know, it was really... it was rather disgusting. What would you
doing
like...
a stage dive into children?
Yeah.
that's illegal. You can't stage dive minors without their parents' consent.
I mean, that's something that I woke up and I didn't really want to see. So it took me a few months to get over it.
The
What would you like to wake up and see happen in this world?
If I keep it really, like, direct, I guess I'd like to wake up and see us opening for Radiohead. I'm going to think about us first, before the world.
Huh?
If that says anything. I'm sure Maurice, I mean, what do you think, Maurice?
No, I actually agree with you. I would tend to think of us first, and then maybe after us opening for the Radiohead, I guess world peace.
I would like to see people in America having less of a disposable income and getting used to paying a little bit more for everything, so that the way corporations and labor systems are built wouldn't have to be quite so exploitative, you know?
Ah.
I would like to see American people get used to paying a little bit more for things instead of going to Walmart and going to Forever 21, which I like to do personally, and I try to stop myself. But it's hard to resist, you know, the low prices. But if we could all get used to the concept that there are no low prices anymore. Kind of like in Europe, like, yeah. You get used to what you have, you treasure the things you have, and everything isn't so disposable.
And yeah, they do a lot more with less.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Name a typical pity party meal.
El Pollo Loco.
El Pollo Loco. We've made such a habit of going to El Pollo Loco that the woman who works there, who I guess shall name the
nameless. Basically, we're VIPs at the local Pollo Loco, and
so we
never pay full price.
Never.
Wow, really? So you get the pity party discount.
Yeah.
Right on.
I go for the dollar legs, and Maurice usually goes for a combo. But they used to have dollar thighs, and I guess they realized that wasn't cost-effective. But that was really good when they used to do that.
Don't get the spicy quesadilla, though. That thing isn't really very tasty.
You know, I'll tell you a little story about Pollo Loco. I grew up in Southern California. They actually used to have, in the late 70s, early 80s, Pollo Loco commercials. Just a few stores existed back then, and their commercials were always on Spanish television, actually. You know, the Mexican channels. And their slogan back then, and they'll never use it again, but, you know, those days are over with, was that if the colonel had our recipe, he'd be a general.
Wow. Nice. Well, I agree. I mean, there's no comparison between Kentucky Fried Chicken and Pollo Loco. I mean, at least Pollo Loco, it's pretty much chicken. Whereas if you go to KFC, I don't think you're necessarily getting chicken.
They do that thing where it's never in the same bag because they use all the materials that are at their...
Yeah, Pollo Loco doesn't seem to have a standardized system of packing their products. And every time we get food there, it's like been packaged in a different creative way by the people who work there. Like either in some bag they found or some box, but it's never packed the same way, which I like to think of as they try to use everything they have instead of like changing the packaging on an item and throwing all the extra out, all the leftover out. I don't know if that's true, though. I could be making that up. Maybe they're just hacks of the one we go to, and they don't know how to wrap the chicken. But
that's right.
The person who packages our chicken at Pollo Loco has to have that extra moment of thought, like, am I going to put this into a plastic bag, or am I going to put this into a styrofoam container? So they're more actively engaged in their job, which is probably better for them than... Burger King, which is another favorite of ours.
That's post-show. It's great. After you don't eat for an entire day.
Yeah.
And then you have a king deal with cheese. That's pretty killer.
I like the Oreo cookie shake.
Even if you're just a spectator at a show, right? You're part of the audience. After show? Oh, yeah. Post-show, you really do have to have a little food. That's true. I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. And the first time I heard your music, I was on the road from Los Angeles to San Diego. And, you know, I cranked it up because it was so beautiful and strange at the same time. Which song would make you crank up your stereo?
I think most things, Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, I might crank Nine Inch Nails. I would definitely crank when they play stuff from Tom York's solo record on the radio, which is so rare. I just feel like I'm not alone. Although that's... I'm sure he sold many, many copies of that, and it's not an obscure record by any means. But
no.
I get excited when that's on the radio. I feel excited about that, and I like to crank it.
Ah.
But then, I don't know, I would crank She Wants Revenge, honestly. I would crank that, and I usually do when that comes on.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, what would make you change the station?
That's really political. hysterical. I mean, are we talking Indy 103.1? Because those are people in our neighborhood. That's the station we listen to a lot.
Right.
Anything on K-Rock, I would change the station. Any of that stuff that sounds like totally Pro Tools'd out and has no real life in it and just sounds like everything else. Oh, and you know what else? The new System of a Down song, which Maurice hasn't heard yet. I like System of a Down. I mean, I don't have a record, but I listen to it, and I think it's interesting. Uh-huh. But this new single of theirs, I would change the channel.
Ah, hey.
I would change the station.
You know, this is why we have opinions, for sure. And yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you on that one. Right on.
Isn't that song weird? Like, what do they think they're doing? They don't want to be heavy anymore or something. They want to tell some lame, obvious, trite story about Hollywood.
Right?
Do you think they got a letter from the government after the song that ends with the lyric, why do they always send the poor? Why don't presidents fight the war? Isn't that the lyric?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think they got a letter from the White House that was like, please refrain from singing about us? And then so this record is all just like about lame, obvious shit.
Sure,
what happened to that? They don't care about that anymore. They care about creeps in Hollywood. I mean, come on. Who cares about those people? We just played at the Viper Room, and that's kind of like the center or the hub of bad Hollywood.
Right.
And although it's scary to physically be there because the vibe is weird, because there's a lot of desperation there and, like, people who are so out of touch with the things that would actually make them happy. But at the same time, everybody knows the score. Every stereotype about Hollywood proper is true. So why write a song about it? Come on.
Right.
Okay, I'm finished. I'm really not that mad at System of a Down, but that song is weak.
I hear you there. Well, here's a silly question. Tom York or Tom Waits?
Tom York, hands down. Sorry. I know how influential Tom Waits has been, and I know how much people love him. I don't, he just doesn't really do it for me.
Oh,
he never
I
has.
I love it.
Okay.
I mean, I think there's this one song on his new record where, I don't know, it sounds like Slaves in the Deep South on the Chain Gang or something, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's
yeah,
why he's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Dude, just show up with my... Like,
yeah, that one's awesome.
Cool, dude. You know, I like that one.
No, I would always take Tom York over Tom Waits.
Well, I love them both, so... Could either one of you tell me what produces the most happiness in your lives?
We have no happiness in our lives.
That's not true. We both have two cats.
Yeah, cats bring happiness in my life. My cats are named Rochester and Mildred. They're brother and sister.
We try to push cats on people, and we try to push, usually in pairs. Like, if someone's like, I lack direction in my life, we're always like, look, go get two cats. Don't get one cat, get two. And get them under, like, 1 month of age so that you can bottle feed them so that they become basically your children. And then you will know, like, great, great joys. And people always think that people don't like cats because when they go to their friend's house, the cat's all aloof. But when you raise your cat is loyal to you. They're good little babies, and they take care of themselves.
Okay.
And your hands don't smell after you pet them.
That's right. They are very clean. That's true. Very clean.
But you can't take them out in public and use them as a status symbol.
I was listening to Lullaby. I believe you state that you can never be too sure. Could you explain a little bit about that song?
So I could say a lot of lofty things about how the government is singing us a lullaby that's similar. Like, a lullaby to tell us and protect us, yet at the same time saying, because, you know, you're in trouble and you're under threat. But the idea is that we live in a world that really doesn't want us to sleep at night for various reasons.
Don't stop looking over shoulders. Don't stop locking all your doors. Check all the dark spots for the fear they hold. Can never be too sure.
We we started recording our full length, and we haven't gotten to that song yet, but I guess we're going to put that on there. But we really wanted to get, like, a stadium full of people to sing it.
Like an eerie anthem.
You know, like in The Wall, Pink Floyd, The Wall?
Yeah.
When they have that, there's, like, hundreds of voices singing that crazy part with the horns.
That's right.
Before The Wall explodes, I think. Kind of that vibe.
Could you tell me a little bit about your studio time? Are there any surprises that you've run into during recording?
No, we've been working on our full-length at Wet and Dry Studios. And our producer, Manny Nieto, he really wanted to capture our essence and do it live. So we've spent already 3 days in the studio sort of getting the basic stuff down, and it actually has been pretty smooth, which is nice, because when we did our EP... When we
recorded our EP, I personally couldn't even play instruments, like, at all. The songs were so new. There weren't any songs that could happen kind of live. I mean, it was all very precarious. We recorded our EP digitally, like into Pro Tools and all that stuff. Well, we're recording our record, our full length, on tape. And our producer actually, like, cuts and edits tape. It's pretty cool. And it's recycled tape. It's tape that's been used for, like, a lot of different things up until the 80s, like other studio albums or commercial soundtrack, and we're recording over it.
Wow.
We're really into recycled things in general. Hmm. We make all of our CD cases out of recycled cereal boxes and other cardboard stock that would otherwise find its way into the trash.
We make our posters out of, my mom is like in the Trout of the Month Club, and the trout comes in this really pristine white cardboard box, and that box makes an excellent poster, and that's what we made the posters. That's what we made our last grouping of posters out of. It was really nice.
And then the edges of the box were perfect little handles to pass out to promote the
show. We could cut the edges and make handles. And then this time...
Butcher paper.
Yeah, butcher paper from a shipment that came to the store I work at. Just like they used it to pack the items so they wouldn't shift in the box while shipping. And it was like a ton of butcher paper. And I guess the point where the idea of throwing certain things out is just depressing. That you're contributing just this much more waste. But at the same time, we're not waste purists. I mean, I create a ton of waste personally. Probably not as much as the average person, but still a lot.
Still, you're conscientious, you know? That means something. I believe that music can save lives. Do you think it saved yours?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. It didn't save my life as much as make it have a reason. And give me fewer moments of whiny complaining about how my life has no reason and how I'm not productive. So my life was, like, very unhappy before. Yeah. It wasn't very unhappy. It was just it didn't feel clicked in to living until the pity party started, and specifically until we started playing in front of people and they actually liked it.
I think rock and roll saved my life. Specifically Led Zeppelin and Radiohead and Quasi, and to a certain extent Failure too. I was kind of a little bit like really into my own melodramas of my life. When you hear like real awesome rock and roll, you don't feel like complaining as much because it's already been stated for you in a better way.
In a powerful way.
In the right way. Now that we get to write music, now that's like the perfect culmination of that, because now Heisenfly and I can create that statement in the perfect way.
Wow.
Or just Heisenfly.
Could either one of you tell me your fondest childhood memory?
Going to college? What's your fondest childhood memory of when we were in high school?
Probably in high school. This is a memory I think about literally once every 3 days. It just will slip into my mind, which was seeing Nine Inch Nails at the Universal Amphitheater. I had such a good time. Well, my mom planned this really elaborate treasure hunt for one of my birthday parties when I was a little kid. And it involved like writing your wishes down and putting them into helium balloons and releasing them into the sky. So that's a pretty fond memory.
That's lovely. Wow.
There was also a creepy clown that she hired, though.
Oh, no clown.
Aside from that, it was great.
As a general rule, we ask the musicians or activists to give us their best pirate impression.
Go for it, Maurice.
Arr!
Bird.
Bird.
Excellent. Hey, it was great talking to you both.